I'm going to talk about women and transitional justice in Ituri. What choice between peace and justice? We have been working in Ituri since 2003, and the work we did was to work with women and civil society at the grassroots level. In 1999, a conflict between pastoralists and farmers degenerated into a bloody conflict which led to 50,000 deaths and 500,000 displaced people. The situation worsened in 2003 with the fall of the city of Bunia. The government decided to put in place the Commission of Pacification of Ituri, which set up an administration that were given the role of managing and pacifying the Ituri district. Maybe to go a little bit in the history, at the time when this Commission de Pacification de l'Ituri was created, there was ongoing talk of at the national level, the process of reconciliation at the national level that was going in San City at the same time. So we found ourselves in a situation whereby we had two peace processes going on. One national one that was going on in South Africa, and another one in Ituri with just these local people who the communities that fought themselves. Now, the problem was that at this point, the problem of Ituri was not part of the discussion at the national level, which means we had the peace process was going on two pace. There was this one on the local level and the other one at the national level. Women, particularly women in Ituri, suffered the most in this conflict. And when we started our work in 2003, we say that we need at least to find a way to reconcile communities, because all the thing that was the government was talking about at San City was about reunite the country, to have a transitional government, to get a constitution, to organize election. And in all that, there was nothing that was talking about communities fighting each other. So we said that we need to have our own talk at the community level so that we can discuss our own problems that are not the problem of having a constitution or having the country united, because the country was divided in two. There was a part that this part that the government was controlling, and the other part was controlled by rebels. And there were three group of rebels. So I can say the country was split in four. Now, in several workshops that we had, we tried, first of all, to understand what was the nature of the conflict. The big problem was that even if we tried understanding what was going on at the grassroots level, we couldn't forget what was going on at the national level, because there was a kind of connection between what was happening in the country and what was happening at the grassroots level. And in those workshops, we tried strengthening capacity of the civil society in the methodology of peace building. We tried calling some other organizations from South Africa to come and share their experience of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We tried all that, but at a certain point of time, we had to talk about transitional justice, because in our point of view, it was also one of the mechanisms that we need to explore to see if communities can come back together. The idea that this gives me is that at a point of time, you you think that finally maybe this is the solution, if we have to talk about what happened, if the truth is told, if we forgive each other, maybe it is going to work. But in the meetings that we had with women, we saw that hope just scramble because they didn't believe in transitional justice at that time as a mechanism that they can take and use for their for reuniting the communities. The first problem was that one of the things that was pointed out by the group was the conflict in Congo is a multifaceted one. It's not, you cannot point it at saying this is the conflict. You have to talk about conflicts with S, many of them. Now, if we have to resolve the problem, which one are we going to take? Are we going to resolve all of them at a time? Are we going to resolve the problem, each and everyone trying to solve the small, small problem that bring us to the overall problem? What are we going to do? And what are we going to do in a situation whereby we have a connection from the external actors in the conflict? I just give an example of Ituri. In Ituri, when pastoralists and farmers, let's say one pastoralist and one farmer, when they started fighting, the pastoralist went and called the UPDF that was in the country at that time. They came and helped kill this group. This group organized itself, and they went back to start. At a certain point, UPDF found itself helping one group and the other, shifting from one group to the other. They played a very key role in the conflict, and the conflict that started in one farm got into the whole district of Ituri. Now, this kind of conflict whereby you see the things that are happening at the national level, what is happening at the local level, what is happening from the outsiders, it was kind of difficult to know what is really the nature of the problem itself, because it was beyond what we could imagine. It was beyond what just the local common people could think of. At a point of time, people didn't even know why they are fighting, because they found themselves in a situation whereby the reason for which they were fighting are no more. Now, that is one point that was discussed in those workshops. Another, I'm skipping because of the time. I don't want to be stressed with my good English. I think you have noticed. Now, the other problem was the peace processes and the political will. When the conflict in Ituri started like a community-based conflict, it was just one community taking their sons and sons mostly, and sending them there, you know, you have to go there and you have to protect us. They went as such from the community, but with time they organized themselves in militia group. And from fighting with machete, they were promoted to guns. And at the point of time, there was no longer that protecting community thing. It was now like, we are now fighting the government. Forgetting that they started by fighting each other, they found themselves at a certain point of time fighting the government. Now, the government tried to finish the fight, but it was kind of difficult. And they started talking with those militia group. Now, the problem that was seen in that talks between the government and the militia group was that in talking, the militia group had conditions. If you want us to demobilize, you have to give us amnesty, asking the government to give them amnesty. And it looked like the government was ready to do so we have to give you amnesty on one side. On the other side, we are going to give you, like for the leaders, they were given I don't know how to call it, but they were promoted as in the high rank of the army. So at this point, what I call victims, now common citizen, they were saying, why are you thinking that we can engage in truth-telling with people who are now generals in the government? They are on the side of the government. How are we confront them? It's not possible for us to say anything because they still have power. And not only that, we saw, because all those amnesty thing didn't engage the ICC. We saw some of those leaders brought to court in The Hague. But with the DDR program, we saw also on the ground these other militiamen coming back to the society, reinserted into the community, which means at a point of time we had this experience of victim having to live near the perpetrators, because even if the ICC is considering the leaders, it doesn't mean that all the rapes, all the looting, all the killing were done by those leaders. There's this troopmen that did those, we can call perpetrators, but at that point they were considered like just civilian. They came back in the community. And many examples are told of these women who have been raped, and they can see the people who raped them in the community. They came back through the process of DDR. In terms of prosecution, yes, Congolese people are crying for justice, but there's no existing framework internally or externally to accommodate this quest to their satisfaction. The only attempt was done during the memorable. There was, before Mobutu came out of power, we organized this Conférence Nationale Souveraine, which is united civil society, the government, and everybody, and the truth was told. But the fact that Mobutu was in power at that time, he just decided to close that process. And that's the only time where at least Congolese people try to look at their history and try to point out at all the causes of their conflict. The Conférence Nationale Souveraine established a commission of ill-begotten wealth, and the commission that looked at political assassinations in the history of the country and sought to establish responsibility. Mobutu just suspended the whole process, and the outcome of CNS never saw the light in the implementation process. The judiciary system in DRC is so weak and corrupt that it is of very little use. For instance, the country has promoted a very constraining law against sexual violence, but in many cases, victims have to give up because they are requested to give, for example, medical proof of being raped. And knowing somebody, for somebody who knows DRC, it's a huge country. And sometimes the rape are not, some people are not raped in the city, in the town. They are raped maybe in the rural area. And you have to walk maybe 15, 20 kilometers to go and have somebody look at you so that you can have the proof that, you know, I've been raped. And for that, most of them, they just say, okay, if this is what they are going to ask me, I'm not going there. Because I'm already, maybe I'm not well now, I have to work, and I have to do it immediately because they need to see. Most of the time, those things just remain quiet. It is as if the judiciary system itself is trying to avoid people, to make people avoid to come to tell what is happening on the ground. Let alone corruption, because that is also another thing, that the one who has more money is the one who has right. You cannot go and fight with somebody who own more than you, because definitely you are going to lose that case. Now, there is also the fear in Ituri, specifically in Ituri, when you talk about trials, you found out that people fear because they don't know who is going to be prosecuted. Just because the conflict started at a community level, it was a question of community, it means everybody was involved. Now, when you are talking about saying, oh, you know, we need to prosecute, they are asking themselves the fact that all of us, we were at a point of time not really direct perpetrators, but at a point of time we helped the conflict. Now, if we accept that they continue this prosecution, we never know. Maybe it will me who will be prosecuted, but because I gave my contribution, I sent my son to the militia group, maybe. And the idea that we have there is that there's a lot of fear, so people found out that no point of prosecution. And this I'm not talking about the ICC, the local one. We are not going there because we never know. Maybe I will be also within the people who will be prosecuted. Another point was about mercy and forgiveness. Congolese people are confronted with the dilemma of identifying with whom they have to tango. The web of responsibility include those located outside DRC. The role played by Congolese, especially the leaders, has always been that of serving outside interest. It is the trauma of the past that locks Congolese leaders into finding it easy to serve external actors to the detriment of their own people. If forgiveness has to take place among Congolese alone, it will not help much in the healing process, because Congolese leaders are only secondarily responsible. We have here a scenario where reconciliation has to take place between the primarily real victim, the Congolese, and the perpetrators, who most often can be from outside the country. I don't know if transitional justice provides a possibility where we can have a cross-border transitional justice, which means we are going to bring in also not only our own people, but the people of other countries. Reparation. These are the discussion that we had. Reparation, how to repair. How can we do the reparation? It is known that there is nothing that can be done to repair the life of somebody who has become lame, widow, childless. Sometimes when you talk about reparation, they just tell you, what is there to repair? Are you going to give me back my children now that I cannot get any other? Are you going to bring me back my limbs that was cut? What reparation are we talking about? But in the other hand, we cannot just keep quiet and see. We need to have a kind of solidarity and show the victims that at least we care. Now, sometimes the tendency is to draw from the culture, and this poses a big problem. We think, okay, we are going to see how things can be done in the culture way of, but the problem is in Congo we have, I have 2 minutes, and in Congo we have 450 ethnic groups. Now, for a kind of community where you have two communities who have to fight, we ask ourselves, which culture are we going to follow? The case of pastoralists and farmers, for the pastoralists, they will tell you, you have to give us a certain number of cows. But the farmers, they don't have cows. So for this kind of conflict where it's two different communities that are fighting, we don't know which culture we can follow. Are we following the culture of one group or of the other? And also the influence of the Occidental culture is so much on the Congolese people that they don't really, at a certain point, they don't really believe in their own culture. They don't be, they don't fear no more the because I heard yesterday the gentleman of Nigeria who used to say, you know, we give you money, you have a hot. People don't believe in those hot anymore. It's not binding. You can do it and know that even if I do it, there's nothing that is going to happen to me. So, last and not the least, it's the willingness to tell the truth. I think for the truth to be told, people must be ready to tell the truth. And in the case of Ituri, I don't think that the communities were ready. We said, I heard that transitional justice is very new. And I don't think that it is well known in the rural areas so that they can understand all the mechanism that implies. Telling the truth, view at the community level, it's not as we are seeing it here, that you have to heal yourself in telling the truth. There, for women, for example, which kind of truth are we going to tell? Because most of them, they don't say that. They don't even say, you know, I was raped. They know saying that you will be stigmatized by the community. And even if you are a married woman, the problem will start in your own house. Which means, which truth am I talking about? Am I going to say the truth that is going to kill myself? Because my husband will chase me out of the house. There's no that support saying that, you know, you went through this, we are there with you, we are going to look to try to find who is the perpetrators. And women are not willing to tell everything that has happened. When you talk with them, they just tell you, you know, just let that thing buried like that. We are not talking about it. Because if we try to talk about it in the community, it's an abomination. We are going to be seen as abomination. There are even cases where you come and tell that you have been raped, they tell you, you agreed with those people so that they can find you there. There's no support of the community. In that case, how people are going to tell the truth and they know that they cannot get support from their own. In conclusion, I can say, from what we learned about transitional justice, we saw that it was too soon for the Ituri case. It was too soon to talk about transitional justice. We needed to give them time to understand what the process is all about. And not only it was too soon, they didn't know what it's all about. On the other hand, we don't think that the leadership in the country is ready to do it properly. Because after the Sun City talk, we had transitional justice, no, we had truth and reconciliation Commission. But that Truth and Reconciliation Commission for 2 years never worked. Didn't do anything in terms of finding the truth or reconciling people. Nothing at all, because the people who were in government at that time were the same people who were supposed to be passing through the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Today we have that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission is provided in our constitution, but in the constitution there is no content of that. There's nothing, you cannot take it from there and know what you are going to do with it. There's no political will. It's look like all the people, the configuration of the country as it is now, it's not really very different from what it was some few years back, because those people who are now in parliament are the same people who were rebel yesterday, the same people who are now in power are the same people who we can call in a certain point of view perpetrators. Now, if they are at the leadership, at the level of the leadership, I don't see them just allowing the communities and the country to go through this Truth and Commission, Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which means transitional justice. It's good. The concepts are good. The mechanism can be good, but we need to try to see how to apply them in each context differently from what is happening. What has happened in Sierra Leone is not really relevant in DRC. It's not, maybe not relevant in Kenya, can't be relevant in another country, in Zimbabwe, for example. We need to see how to adapt it on the ground. We need to make it known by the people who are supposed to get some advantage from it. And we need to find a way of, in the case where there's no political will, what are we going to do? Is it because the transitional justice depend too much on the leadership? They have to agree with it. And if they are not, it's not in their interest, I don't see them doing that. So I can say in conclusion that for DRC, we still have a long way to go.